Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Thank you so much for allowing us into your lives to give you a hand and hopefully inform you as well. My name is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program here. Gary Baker and Ed Rudell are with me in studio here. We're going to be doing what we've been doing for 16 years. That's keeping you in touch with what's going on in the digital world around you and helping you get connected to the Internet and stay connected. We'll be talking with some people who are having some problems and solving them for them. And we've got a great lineup of guests today. Back with that in just a moment. Thank you again for being with us here on the Internet Advisor and getting hold of our podcast. And for those of you folks who are on our affiliates, welcome. Glad to be able to talk with you. This weekend, my friend Ed Rudell is in studio as well as Gary Baker. Eddie, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Foster.
I think one of the topics that we're going to be talking about today, you are very interested in, or as a matter of fact, one of your kids is interested in, and that's a subject, something called GoFundMe, which is a crowdsourcing way of gathering money for just about any kind of a thing. And we're going to be talking with one of our listeners who is trying to get some help taking care of his aged mother, which is really neat. But it's, you know, you hear of Indiegogo and Kickstarter for some of these high-tech projects. This is kind of like for more personal projects.
Yeah, and I think Gary's son did something fundraising when he went to install those solar panels down
exactly.
In South America.
Right. They took the Boy Scouts, went down there, and he was able to raise some money for the trip. And that's the kind of thing that we're going to be talking about today. So if you've got a personal cause out there, you want to stay tuned because that's going to be a great segment. We're also going to be talking with Reed Tratoris, who is with Are You a Human? Which, by the way, is not a rude question. It's the kind of question you want to ask of those nasty bots that are out there. And, you know, I ran into it this week. Do you have trouble with CAPTCHA? Those things where they kind of make those squiggly lines, the letters,
etc. I haven't had a problem in a few weeks. But yes, you know, sometimes you do the squiggly lines or the characters, and I'm like, I cannot even interpret those letters. And that's why I liked CAPTCHA so much, because you play a little game or an intuitive little interface, and you're human.
Well, they've come up with a great new thing, too. I love this.
Okay.
I don't know if you're as frustrated as I am sometimes when you go to YouTube or somebody sends you a look at this video and you go to click on it and you got to wait through these darn ads. You know, like a 30-second ad or at least 15 seconds of it before you can skip it. They have found a way of getting past those, but still giving the value to the advertiser who wants to make sure that you see their brand.
And that's important.
Yep,
and I understand that when I watch these videos, but when I'm watching videos on YouTube and we just have someone that's doing a family video and they're just, you know, getting a little bit more in their pocket because they want that 800,000 clicks, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It drives me nuts. Well, Reed's going to talk about that with us. So we got some neat things coming up. I thought when we started the program here, I was wondering, what do you use to keep up with tech news?
What do? You know, my default homepage is, I bring up two pages. I bring up the CNN technology, and then I also bring up the Google News portal. And by default, I'll just scroll through the science and technology sections of those.
Now, is Google News, I know at one time.
It's an aggregate, yes.
Yeah, at one time they had, what was the Google News site that they had that was so good? That I had it all the time, and then they got rid of it. I forget what it was. But anyway, I didn't know that they were still doing that kind of Google News aggregating.
Yes.
That's obviously a great source for it. I use Flipboard.
Yes.
Have you used a flipboard for that?
No. I just finally got a touchscreen laptop. But no, I haven't.
You don't have to have a touchscreen to be able to use Flipboard. If any of you folks out there have seen it, it's a really great application you can download to your computer. You can download to your phone. Once you set it up, you can get news of all kinds. And it also links in. You have it linked into your Facebook mm-hmm. or LinkedIn. And then you can tell it to look for news headlines. And then I have technology. I think I have sports headlines and just general news. And I forget one of the other things I have. Right. I found that it aggregates pretty well. But by aggregating, I mean, folks, that it gathers the news, the important news.
That you're interested in.
That you're interested in. And that's the nice thing about these sites. More and more of these sites that are out there nowadays is that you can do that. You can get the news that you really use and you're interested in. Hmm. So you use CNET and then you use Google News.
Yes.
When you use CNET, tell folks a little bit about that, what it is that you use on CNET, which, by the way, I often go to as well.
I went to CNN, but I also do go to CNET, but not on a regular basis. I like there's real people writing articles for yes. CNET that actually represent the CNET, and they'll give you their opinions on technology. Mm-hmm. I love the reviews on current technology.
Yes,
as well.
They've got some great reviews on there, and they are, I think, they were bought by CBS, I believe.
I'm not sure.
But anyway, they were bought by a large broadcast outlet, and they have continued to do the great reporting they did. But it's kind of neat with that bigger outlet brought in more of the discipline, I think, of how he put stuff together and present it. So it really is really, really good. I like ZDNet.
Right.
Which is Ziff Davis.
Yes, yeah, I used to get the magazines all the time,
mm-hmm.
and I just stopped once we started going online and getting that as your major news source, which is, of course, has impacted all of these traditional news outlets like ZDNet used to be,
yeah.
Ziff Davis.
One of the things I found very useful on ZDNet, and it helps us in preparing for our program, is this Week in Review that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think CNET does some of it as well. Part of the reason, folks, that I'm going through this with Ed right now is I know that you are interested, obviously, in technology, but some of the things you want to talk about or get into understanding a little bit better, it's good to know that there are tools out there to help aggregate it. Now, what are some of the stories that you picked up this week, Ed?
Well, there's a couple of them, and I put them on our Facebook for the Internet Advisor. One of them is, I did not realize this, but 95% of most banks' ATMs run Windows XP.
I saw that.
Could you believe yeah. that?
Now, I did not believe that when I saw that.
I mean, you got a good OS. You got a good OS. And apparently the banks feel the same way. But they're going to stick with something until they can squeeze every red penny out of that, you know? Mm. And that's just the bank mentality.
But that kind of frightens me that ATMs are running on XP.
Well, get this. 200,000 approximately... that the banks own. There's another 200,000 that are private, like Kiosk. They run an even older operating system, which is the Windows CE, which was like the, you know, the handheld firmware type of Windows.
And folks, this is just holding our money. Oh, my goodness. Hey, we're going to talk in just a moment about GoFundMe, an application to help your cause. I'm sure we've all seen heartwarming stories of people who have, let's say, have gone through an accident and need some help, or people who have got a technology product that they're trying to put out to the market. And you'll see them go to places like Kickstarter or Indiegogo. As a matter of fact, Gary, we were talking about your son having gone to Indiegogo in order to get the funds to go down and do those solar panels in Guatemala.
That's right. He was doing his Eagle Project by installing solar panels in Mayan Indian villages in mm-hmm. Guatemala. And he put up an Indiegogo site and raised the money that way.
Well, we have a guest with us right now, and this is somebody who is a friend of the program. Bill Van Horn is with us. And Bill, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've been a fan for a long time.
I'm delighted to have you on. Bill, what struck me, and I had seen this, I think it was on Facebook, that I saw it first of all, and then I was intrigued with it. You have gone to a site called GoFundMe, and we're going to have links to that on our homepage along with some other things that I'll talk about in just a moment. Could you explain to the listeners, first of all, what your particular cause is, kind of briefly, and then how you found GoFundMe?
Okay, well, thank you for the opportunity. My cause is really My mother. I'm my mother's full-time caregiver here at home in West Bloomfield. And unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, I was hit by a young driver and hit and run, and who totaled my car.
Oh my!
And yeah, and we were okay, and mom had to go to the emergency room, but everything checked out. But the situation is such that I've been my mom's full-time caregiver for 4 years.
Right.
It's really expensive.
Right.
To be a
yes,
caregiver.
It is.
And for a long time, her income versus some of my retirement savings was enough. So we got down to a lot less income.
Right.
In other words, you
worked your way through your savings, and then getting a car blown out from underneath you didn't help at all.
Right.
You're up against the wall then to take care of yourself and your mother.
Right. And just to save money, you go to great lengths. So I dropped my collision on my car, my collision coverage 2 years ago to save money.
Yeah.
And I did save money. But I ended up only getting a mini tort settlement from the young man's insurance, which was $1,000. When I was a teenager, you could buy a used car for $1,000.
Not much anymore. So you're faced with a huge burden then financially, helping to take care of your mom. Your car is gone. How did you find GoFundMe as a way of raising money to help you?
I'm a baby boomer, so I'm not real. I was never really familiar with, you know, social media much. I'm moderate. You know, I heard about.
Yeah, I hear you.
But I just literally went on my Facebook page and posed a question to, I have a couple hundred friends on Facebook, and just posed a question. You know, can anyone steer me in the right direction to one of those fundraising sites that I've heard about?
Ah.
And my friends forwarded the request to their friends, And in reading some of the responses, one of them in particular stood out.
Right.
And the young lady says, no problem, just, you know, somebody go start a GoFundMe page for him. You know?
Wow.
So I thought, wow, that's GoFundMe.
Okay.
So I went to the page, and it was, you know, very, very easy. No one had to do it for me.
Wow.
And I just, you know, I described the situation. I probably over-described it.
That's okay. You're kind of pleading your cause. So when you went to GoFundMe then, how do they screen people for that particular site?
They ask you about your background, and you have to give them your Social Security number so they can prove that it really is you.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
And they have to upload a picture. Someone reads it before they publish the page.
So you went to the site. You presented your pitch to them, essentially, okay? You gave them the Social Security number so they could find out that you were you. And then what did they do to check that this story was legitimate, that you're asking to have money to help you to take care of your mom, to stay home and take care of your mom? From what I understand, and we had hoped to have somebody from GoFundMe on the air with us, unfortunately we couldn't get them on with us, but if you go to their site, essentially they say they use social media to check you out, to make sure that you are who you are. In other words, they use various other kind of sites.
I'm sure they went to my, yes. I'm sure.
So what they do is they dig into the background. So I couldn't go on there and say, you know, for instance, I couldn't pretend to have the same situation you have and try to mock it up, because they're going to go and try to tear that story apart behind the scenes to make sure that it is what it says it is, right?
Well, I wasn't privy to all that,
right.
But yes, I'm sure. Yes, I know they investigated my Facebook page, and so I wasn't privy to all that. That's behind the scenes.
How long was it between the time that you asked for the site and to do your fundraising there, and you got permission to do that?
Less than a half an hour.
Okay, so in that time, they had done some research in the background to make sure you were who you say you were, right?
Yes.
Now, was there any money up front that they required?
No upfront money.
Okay.
The GoFundMe website does take 5% of the donation.
Okay. And by the way, folks, that is, I've looked at a number of other sites, that's pretty standard.
Yeah. There's an additional fee. The company that processes the online payments is called WePay.
Yeah.
They take 2.9%
plus
30 cents per donation. So you end up 7.9% plus 30 cents per donation.
Okay, and you will find, like with PayPal and some of the other ones, they do that. Ed, was that your question?
Well, you know, basically, because I'm running into a similar situation where my daughter's doing an internship and it happens to be overseas, it's amazing how expensive they are. And as Gary has said on the air, interns aren't paid for some things. Engineers, yes. No problem.
Right.
If you get engineers, or if you're a programmer, you know, that's a competitive market. They're going to pay those interns.
Right.
But you're doing something like my daughter, they don't pay.
Right.
So she basically has to raise all that money herself to go to London for a one semester of class.
Right. Now, Bill, do you have a certain period of time that you've got to raise that money?
In my mind, yes. But no. I could probably try to extend this for 6 months if I had to, but I don't think they would just let it go indefinitely. But in my mind, you know, I was
okay,
thinking.
But I mean, do they say, okay, you say, for instance, I've got 30 days to do this. You start raising your money. I think you were a little over a third of the way of raising. How much money were you trying to raise overall?
$6,500.
$6,500. So you're about a third of the way of that. And
I'm at
then,
$2,180, yeah.
Okay. Now, what happens if you don't? It doesn't sound like there's any kind of penalty if you don't reach your goal within a certain amount of time. Is there?
No, there's no penalty.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
So some sites there are, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You don't get any of the money if you don't raise it all.
I think Kickstarter is that way, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, usually. And then also, a lot of them will give you up to 60 days.
Right.
I would think after a couple months, they'd probably say something to them.
Yeah. Okay. But yours has been progressing kind of, you know, steadily. You've gotten a third of what you're... When do you see that money?
It's up to me when I request the withdrawal.
Ah.
And I can either get it deposited directly into my bank account, mm-hmm. or they'll mail me a check.
Very interesting. Before you did this, did you check out with some other people, like, hey, is this legitimate or not?
I just sent a message to my Facebook friends that I was interested in the site,
mm-hmm.
and the young lady that mentioned it to me initially, you know, answered me back again,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, kind of confirmed that she had experience or someone in her family had experience
okay.
with it, and it was fine. So, and then, plus, I noticed that when you click on the donate button,
yep.
That little padlock comes up to make sure that it's a secure
site. It's a secure site. All right. Well, listen,
site.
Bill, I know you've got to run. We have to run, too. I want you to keep in touch with us to tell us how this experience is going. And after the break, when we come back, I want to tell folks about also a review site that I saw about GoFundMe and some of the other ones. But, Bill Van Horn, thanks for calling. Let's keep in touch. I want to find out how you progress with this, okay?
Very good. Thank
All right,
you
Bill.
Very much.
Back in just a moment. You know, I want to give a little footnote here for those of you who are listening to our conversation with Bill Van Horn about GoFundMe. First of all, we're going to have links on our homepage there that you can click on to take a look at it for yourself and maybe consider it for raising some money for a cause that you have, a personal cause. But I did some research, Gary and Ed, on how they stacked up. And there was an interesting site that I got to, which I will also post there for you to folks to look at, that reviews these different sites. And actually, GoFundMe got a pretty good rating on that.
Well, I think everybody, if they find a new site like this, should go do the look at the reviews.
Right.
Some just, for whatever reason, gave it a really bad review. They
mm-hmm.
did a whole lot of work, and for whatever reason, they couldn't make it work, or they were told that they violated one of the rules, and
mm-hmm.
that was all they said. So there wasn't a lot of interaction on those review sites. All the rest were really positive.
Absolutely. That's what I found.
It was either fives or ones.
Yeah. isn't that kind of usual and when you go looking at? And by the way, I bet you looked at a number of sites, didn't you?
I did. I had to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I did the same thing. I think around five sites in all, and I'll try to refer to them because that was my concern before I even got Bill on to talk about this because I didn't want our listeners being suckered into some scam.
Well, you know what? I'm thinking about, we were just talking about this today with my wife and I, and one of my wife's girlfriends mentioned it to her that there is a fundraising site
mm-hmm.
that they've used, and I don't recall what it was, but I'm going to offer this as an alternative.
Yep. I think GoFundMe is a pretty good, it's out of San Diego, folks. It's a national organization. It hasn't gotten quite the track record that, let's say, an Indiegogo has.
Now, do they take Bitcoins?
Hopefully
did they ever find the owner of the Bitcoin exchange that went bankrupt?
Oh, yeah, they found him, and he showed up in bankruptcy court, or the Japanese version of the bankruptcy court,
yeah.
And he was very apologetic, almost crying.
Well, the Japanese form, I believe, is that when you filed up in public, you apologize
in public.
So it was very much that form. Yeah.
But the other thing about Bitcoin, to completely sidetrack this conversation, is that they actually found the gentleman that could have actually... originally came up with Bitcoin, although he's denying it.
Yes, he is.
Completely.
Yeah, Japanese-American fellow on the West Coast who was saying, not me, not me.
No, I just share the same name.
I'm sure I would deny it, too.
Given the recent headlines, I think so, too. Anyway, folks, we want you to do your own due diligence about GoFundMe,
yeah.
but we can say that we have done some background on it, and on balance, it looks like it's a legitimate organization. Bill Van Horn certainly has put his money on that, and do your research on it. We're going to keep up this with Bill as well.
Another what I think is best practice. When you're looking at crowdfunding sites, if you're doing something like what Bill did or like what my son Justin did, Justin found was working with a nonprofit organization, a 501c3 called the Appropriate Technology Collaborative.
Oh, yes, that's
and
right.
Then it ran, all the money ran through the nonprofit,
right?
And because of that, first of all, the fees were less, and the money came sooner.
Yeah, and you should understand, by the way, folks,
and the people got a tax deduction.
Exactly.
So if you can figure out how to help a 501c3,
right?
You know, maybe they can help you too. But maybe there's a way to help more people than just you know, your original target, yourself or your mother or somebody. So that might be a good way to, you should explore that opportunity.
You should also realize, too, that anytime you go to one of these organizations, money is going to be taken out for administrative fees.
That's right.
And so look at those reviews, and you will see, for instance, that they indicate how much is taken out. So when I said 5%, that's standard. But then you also have got like the PayPals and the other ones who handle the money. They're going to take their little portion off. So he said, I think it was 7-something percent in all. So keep that in mind. Anyway, due diligence. Now, I am delighted.
So we've been blocking this for so long, I think that we ought to let our next guest just play through.
Reed Trotouris, I think you would agree. We should let you just play through and not have to go through any other hoops.
Hi, Foster. Nice to talk to you again.
Good talking with you. Reed Trotouris is with us. He's been in studio with us. He is the gentleman who is behind, the genius behind something called Are You a Human? Which is not a rude question. It is, in fact, the kind of question that you want a serious answer to if somebody is trying to get onto your secure website. And Reed, just kind of quickly, for those who may not be familiar with Are You a Human, talk a little bit about what your organization has done up to this point to help secure sites.
Yeah, so our mission as a company is we want to turn online annoying experiences into really great experiences. So the thing we started with is the CAPTCHA. Most people probably haven't heard of that, but you've seen one. It's squiggly text and numbers that websites will make you fill out to make sure that you're a real person and not an automated program that could be there to post spam or do other malicious activities.
Those are the ones that I never get right the first couple times.
I was going to say that. I had to do that twice this week, and I got them wrong both times. I had to go back at it again.
I have never heard someone say that they get them right on the first time, so you guys are not alone.
Okay, and then the solution you had to that was, I think, rather ingenious, or solutions.
So, yeah, what we have you do is, rather than type in this phrase that you can't read, we have you play a short little game. So we'll say, you know, put some toppings on a pizza, that type of thing. Yeah. And what we do is actually analyze how you interact. So rather than make you complete a difficult task, we put the onus on us to look at your interaction, and based on your mouse movements, where you click, we can tell if you're, in fact, a real person or not.
Wow. And by the way, how long have you been doing this, Reed? I'm sorry, because I'm trying to think when we had you in here was just when you were starting out.
Yeah, so we've been doing this now for almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years, okay.
You know, we launched at the beginning of 2012 publicly, and now we're on more than 13,000 websites, and we serve about 150 million of these games a month.
It's been
a great few years.
It's been great. And Reed, one of the nice things about this, folks, is that this is one of the companies that grew up here in Detroit.
Yeah, we did. Detroit Venture Partners is one of our investors, and we started off in Ann Arbor when we were in grad school there and moved downtown, and we've absolutely loved it. The community downtown is great, and there's a small but growing and really, really supportive group of entrepreneurs in Detroit that's great to be a part of.
That's exciting. Now, I understand that what you've done, and this is the part that intrigued me, you have found a way of getting by those darn ads that are in front of every video I try to watch online.
Yeah, so you know, we started off cracking this capture problem, and we said, okay, where else can we take our technology that looks at human interaction to make life better for people online? So the next piece we looked at was pre-roll videos. You guys have seen these. You probably have seen the commercial 10 times already, but you have to sit for 30 seconds before you can get to some video you actually want to watch.
Yes.
And now, because they're so annoying, it's a problem for advertisers, too.
Yes.
More than 80% of people just ignore those ads. What do you do when it comes up? You go to a different tab. You go get a glass of water. You don't pay attention. So not only are you annoyed, but advertisers are wasting money.
Yeah.
So what we do is we kind of have a middle ground that helps both people out. So we take our same idea of games and put those on top of a video. So the user can choose. If you want to watch the ad, go ahead. If you don't want to watch the ad, you engage with the brand. So, you know, again, have a little branded interaction. And the benefit to the advertiser is, rather than guessing was a real person watching this video, you know that a real person actually had a 5-second interaction with your brand. And for a person, rather than sitting for 30 seconds, you get to get right to the content you want.
I like that. I'd rather do 5 seconds of that than listen to
well, to listen to the same darn ad each time. And Breed, you brought up a good point, Gary.
Yes.
I am so mad at Xfinity because of this. Wherever I was, every time I tried to watch something, I was seeing that. Every time I try to watch something on their videos, I had to sit through the same ad.
So, well, they need to sell more ads, that's all. So you get a variety.
Yeah, but it's so creative that you've actually begun out there and been able to think of a new way to approach advertising. That's great.
Yeah, and the real thing we're trying to do is, like, for years people have been adding new spots to place ads, right? Another banner ad, another video. And they're always approaching this from the advertiser perspective. And we've really structured our company that we're looking first at a user perspective. And what we find is that when you first and foremost focus on a great user experience, you get much better advertising results. So when people look at our products, they remember the brand almost 4 times as often, and they are 50% more favorable towards the brand.
If you're an
advertiser, people remember you and they like you. And I think that's an important distinction, because what good is it if someone remembers you but hates you?
In the
scenario you just described, right? You clearly remember the Xfinity brand, but you were mad, and that doesn't do them any good.
No, it doesn't at all. If anything, it's kind of piling on. Reed Trattoris is with us from Are You a Cuman? And I want to talk a little bit more about the whole thing, what you do with avoiding the capture. But in summary, I think what's clever here is that you have helped the advertiser have a positive experience because they're putting money out and you want them to benefit from it so that they continue to support whatever happens to be that you're watching. On the other hand, you've also made it a positive experience for the user so that they're not just kind of disgusted with it. And even better, it's not a negative experience with the brand. That is genius. I want to find out more about that. Can you hang on, Reed?
Yeah, no problem.
We're going to have you hang on for just a little bit. And Mike Brennan is coming in with Michigan Technology News in just a moment. When we come back, we'll be talking with Reed just a little bit more. Reed Trattoris, who is with us from Are You a Cuman, talking about some very clever ways of helping sponsors to get their money's worth and helping us to be free of those ads that are making us crazy. It's that time in our program to welcome Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MyTech News, Michigan Technology News. Mike has been a reporter for many, many years, and we're going to be talking about some of the headlines there of MyTech News. It's a co-sponsored email that we send out every Friday, which has all these headlines that Mike has gathered together, plus a lot of great audio elements, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, Mr. Brennan, welcome to the program again.
I was just reflecting on that many, many years in the business comment, you know, so I think you're saying I'm old, but I didn't read it that way, though. That's okay.
I would deny it, Mike.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. You know,
so. It means he is experienced. By the way,
I like that. That works.
The folks who appreciate that experience, by the way, are some of the people at ITA and News Horizons Computer Learning Centers. And by the way, they get a special deal out there, which I think has already taken place. But it's from March the 10th, coming up very soon. They've got some special classes and some deep discounts there for computer learning. And then ITC also, the nation's largest independent electricity transmission company, serving Michigan's customers and customers throughout the Midwest, also enjoy MyTech News and want to make sure that you hear about it as well, along with Warner Norcross and Judd Attorneys at Law. Well, after that grand introduction, Mike, let's take a look at some of the headlines you've been looking at this week. Merit Network is completing upgrades on statewide fiber optic backbone. That sounds like a lot of excitement.
The real crown jewel in that is that they've got 100 gigabits per second extension now in place from Ann Arbor, Detroit, Lansing to Chicago. Chicago's where you really pick up the internet backbone.
Yeah.
And so it's going to make it even faster. And, of course, there's that Internet 2 experiment, which they've been doing, gosh, how long, Gary? About 15 years now?
Yeah, at least.
We had Doug Van Howling on here. It's got to be almost 10 years ago, I think.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, what it all boils down to is they're really aimed at universities and schools and different things, and that's where, you know, everybody's using computers and they're eating up a lot of bandwidth, and this will make it even faster for them to do that.
I guess the good news is then that what we benefit from, as you said, Mike, is getting that throughput to the main backbone, which is out of Chicago. And that is very important to us. So extremely important headline there. Michigan's, by the way, I'd like to see this. Michigan's CIO, Chief Information Officer, who happens to be David Behan, who was on the air with us, has been named a Computer World Premier 100 Award winner.
Yeah, another recognition for David. He's a good man, does a good job for the state. And now he's in the spotlight as being one of the top CIOs in the country, as named by Computer World. So kudos to him.
Well, you know, and he just took over the directorship of the Department of Technology Management and Budget.
Right.
So, yeah, I never get that right either. So.
Yeah. So I actually saw David yesterday and congratulated him on both of these awards. We were at the he put together a CIO kitchen cabinet of a number of CIOs in the state. We've been meeting for the last 2.5 years or so, and just a great guy. He was here
with his family.
Ago.
Yeah, about a month,
about
ago.
A month ago.
Great guy, and delighted to see our folks being recognized on a national level. Hey, one more before we take a break here. 11 Michiganders have made Forbes' richest list. That's kind of neat to see, led by, of course, the Meyer brothers. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Gazillionaires, actually. The two brothers who are the grandsons of Fred Myers, who started with a lowly grocery store in Grand Rapids.
Incredible.
They're worth $8.5 billion. But actually, I think there's a name missing from this list. Reliable sources tell me that Gary Baker is also a billionaire.
But that's
he just hides his assets.
That's Monopoly money.
Yeah, if only I had a fraction of that amount, that would be wonderful.
Well, those are the kind of stories, folks, that Mike has been following for us, and we're going to have one more before we wrap up here. But the neat thing about MyTech News or Michigan Technology News is it comes to you absolutely free. And the way you can get hold of it is to simply go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page, and there's a button that you just press, and shazam, you put your information in there. And every Friday, you will get not only these stories, but many others that cover national and statewide and local news about technology. And also, we'll have audio resources in there, for instance, our podcasts and many other kind of things that you'll be able to get as well as kind of a bonus for checking in. And matter of fact, there's also chapters to the book that Mike has put out along with Richard Steenan about cyber spying. And so you get that serialized in the MyTech News as well. All of that for nothing, nada. You don't pay a penny. You get it delivered to you every Friday, and it's good news. So please make some time and make sure that you're on top of all the news that's happening here in our state. Also, great resources for entrepreneurs. Hey, let's wrap things up, Mike, by looking at a study that's coming out. Lansing rates among the top 20 web hosting locations in the world.
That's largely because of Liquid Web, which was started out by a teenager, 10 or 12 years ago, Matt Hill, who started out with just basic, kind of like what Gary did with online tech, but he's got 22 or 3,000 customers worldwide now, and it's just tremendous. And so that's the main reason, although I'm sure the government plays into that a bit, that Lansing is such an area for having a monitoring website and worldwide traffic and all that, but primarily because of Liquid Web. And I have to put in a disclaimer, they also host my website. But always great service. Love those guys. So.
Well, it's so funny because they seem to go almost under the radar here, yet they're a household name in some other parts of the world.
Yeah, Matt, I keep telling Matt he needs to kind of do more than he does, but he just likes flying under the radar. He's got to be making some serious green now, and he's doing well and hiring a lot of people. And I've toured his facilities there. They're huge, so.
Well, it's kind of neat to know our state capital is also the capital for a lot of technology as well. Mike, thank you so much for being with us. Again, that's mytechnews.com. You can subscribe to that by simply going to our homepage again. Mike Brennan, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Have you here. Hey, Reed Trattoris, you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right, Reed. I know we don't have too much time here, but I did want a chance. Reed Trattoris with Are You a Human? That's a site that is beating capture by giving you a fun experience rather than a nasty one. Let's capsulize again what you've done with those videos that you see online with the ads that are in front of them. You've got some clients that are now using your way of both recognizing the brand, but also having some fun before you get to the videos.
We want to take an experience that is not pleasant for anyone, the pre-roll video, and we give users a choice. You can either choose to watch the video or choose to play a little game and engage with the brand instead. And what we've found is the great thing is when users choose to engage, not only do they get to their content more quickly, but they get better results for advertisers. They remember the brand more often, and they think more favorably towards the brand because the advertiser gave them a choice and didn't force them to sit there for 30 seconds with no control.
And the memories are fond ones, Eddie?
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the website now, and it just basically says, you know, drag the sold sign on top of the house.
I love it.
You know.
Excellent. So it's a little thing instead of sitting through the same darn ad. Reid, congratulations to you and much success to Are You a Human? Keep us in touch with the next great steps, leaps forward that you make as well, all right?
Thanks so much, Foster.
Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor, the part of the program where we do our very best to help you, our listeners, with problems that you've run into and questions that you have. And, of course, you can simply go to our site, the Internet Advisor, internetadvisor.net, and hit that Contact Us button and get answers. Well, put your questions in there, and then we come up with some of the answers, which is what we're going to do in just a moment. So stick around as we tackle your problems and find some solutions for you. Welcome to what is, I think, my favorite part of the program, part where we get to connect with you, our listeners, and to answer some questions you have about your computers or your internet experience. And, by the way, during these times when you folks and our affiliates and those of you who are listening to us on podcasts are getting hold of us rather than calling us during a live program, you simply go to internetadvisor.net, and there's a Contact Us button on the top. Click on that. And then just send us your question. And that begins the conversation. In one case, in just a moment, we're going to be talking with one of our listeners that Ed's had a good kind of conversation back and forth with, but we thought that the subject was an interesting one to bring to you folks in general. So again, if you have got a question for us, please just click on that Contact Us button, put your information in there, and leave a phone number as well. And so when we can, we will get back in touch with you, and maybe you can even get you on the air with us here. So, Ed and Gary, there's some news items that have been going on this week that I thought we'd just touch on kind of quickly before we go to our callers, because you had some fascinating ones, Eddie, that you've been looking at.
You know, the Roku.
Oh,
Roku's coming out with a Roku Slim, similar to the Google Chromecast.
Oh.
And basically, it's a slim down. It's about the size of a USB flash drive.
Yeah.
And it just plugs directly into the HDMI port of your modern TV, flat screen or plasma. And it has Wi-Fi built into it, infrared for remote control capability. And I have something like this. It's the Favi. We had the guest
here a couple years ago. Yes, yes.
They're primarily like a broadcaster, you know, projection company. They have a number of projection pieces of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using this as a means for their, you know, to penetrate this market. It never really took off. I love mine. It runs an Android operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So does the Google. And so will
the Roku. Right. Exactly.
And, but I didn't realize that it has like over 12,000 channels that you can access
and
on
that's
the Roku.
It. One of the headlines I saw was, you know, this is like the kiss of death to the Chrome. What was it called?
The Chromecast.
Because Chromecast is so limited in terms of the number of channels it has. This is like taking that Roku box, the one that you spent like 100 or maybe 50 bucks on, anyway, and squeezing it down into the small size,
giving you
all of those channels.
Yep, and their other devices will still be available.
Yes.
This device will be offered for $50, direct competition to the Chromecast. And, you know, it works really good. The only problem I've noticed with these is their Wi-Fi reception is not the greatest.
Yeah.
On both the Chromecast and the Favi that I have, you have to be a pretty good distance.
Pretty close to your Wi-Fi hub, wherever that is.
You're talking 10 feet.
No, I'm talking maybe between 20 and 30 feet, where instead of the 60 or 80 feet that any other device in my house should be able to reach. I don't have a big house, but I keep my Wi-Fi in the basement.
And it just
doesn't have, you know, it never was a problem before.
I got you.
It's a problem now.
Okay, so you have to have it closer to your Wi-Fi for the time being, at least.
Right.
All right, that's it. I when I saw that, I thought, wow, that is going to be such a big hit, because Roku, I have an Apple TV, and which is a competitor to the Roku, but it just doesn't have all the channels. And one of my daughters has one of the Roku devices, and it's like, I wonder if I am
at
50
cheap.
Bucks. Oh, my Lord, at 50 bucks. This is a no-brainer.
Yeah, it is. And the other piece of information I have is that
excuse me, by the way, folks, it also comes with its own remote, and it's a big one, not like the Apple TV, which is this little, like a tongue depressor.
Oh, it comes with a full-size remote. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and you can also use web-based, so you can use your iPad or your Android device to actually control your TV, because that's it's a network appliance.
Right, exactly.
The other piece of information I found that was really interesting, and because I have now a Windows 8 device. I received my son's computer that I bought off of Amazon.
Oh, that's right.
If you recall, my son had a Sony Vaio. It went belly up. Mm-hmm. I went to Amazon, bought a $300 Lenovo, sent it to him so he could use it for a month. Well, I get it back now because I fixed his Sony Vaio.
So you got a Windows 8 product.
Right. And I am struggling along with a lot of other people with the Windows interface, and that you have to reach and touch it and stuff, and, you know, finding the applications. Well, Microsoft released to its OEMs Windows 8.1 Update 1. 8.1 introduced a lot of fixes to the Windows 8 interface, including the ability to boot up to a standard desktop. Well, with this new update that they're going to be released in April, you'll have the ability to, when you boot up your device, if Windows does not detect a touchscreen, it will automatically boot to the traditional interface.
Automatically. Wow.
It'll also offer our context menus that we all miss. You know, when you right mouse click on something and you want to be able to...
Yes, that drop down.
Those drop down menus, they're going to reintroduce those back again.
Oh, wonderful.
Many different things. I'm going to try to find a concise article from Microsoft that discusses, so I can post it on our website.
So how are people reacting to this?
The people that downloaded it, get this, it was available, and Microsoft had to close the holes because standard people like you and I were accidentally downloading it, and they loved it.
Excellent.
They go, when can I get this the real
thing? Oh, that is good news for Microsoft. Hey, I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have one of our listeners, Tom Krogowski, that you've been talking with this week, who, speaking of Vios, had a Sony Vaio around for a long time, I believe, and was looking for a new computer,
a suitable replacement.
A suitable replacement. And the conversation you had was fascinating to watch. So what we're going to do is we're going to invite Tom to come on the air, because I know a lot of people are looking at this kind of thing with the end to Windows XP. I had a friend of mine, for instance, who called. Sam said, I've got this old machine, and he got a virus on it accidentally, and it fouled things up completely. So he says, this is a six-year-old machine. I'm ready to move over. A lot of people are in that place right now saying, where can I go? What's out there? First of all, it's exciting to hear the Windows 8.1 update is there, because that'll be available to people. But beyond that, where do people go? This is a question more and more they're asking. So we're going to be talking with Tom in just a moment with Ed about how he makes that decision, because I think that's really important to kind of go through that process of how you choose that brand new machine, whatever it may be. So stick around. We've got more good news and more good advice coming for you. Well, as I said previously, if you go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, throughout the week, there is a way that you can get your question asked and get involved in a dialogue with our experts, with either Cal Carson about Mac computers, or with Ed Rudell, who is our expert with Windows, or Gary or myself will chime in, and sometimes Shane Hamlin also will call on him with his expertise of working day by day.
That was good.
Well, what Shane, that's the word, what Shane says, it's the gospel.
Well, he's also
to Shane.
Yeah. Well, he also works on a day-to-day basis with people like our listener who's on line with us now, and that is Mr. Tom Krogowski. Tom, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for being with us here. You began a conversation with Ed, and Ed, I'm going to let you introduce us to that kind of conversation with Tom, because you had a six-year-old Sony Vaio laptop, and congratulations on making it work that long. Running Windows XP, and it's got QuickBooks Business software on it. Okay, it worked without any problem, but now you're faced with having to replace it because of the Windows XP being orphaned on the 8th of April, and you're looking for something that will run that, plus be able to run QuickBooks, I imagine, as well, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So, You went to Eddie and said, what do I do? Where do I go? Eddie, how did you respond?
I normally don't give out suggestions on laptops. I let people do their own investigation. They find out. And he sounded like he knew exactly what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw he's thinking about getting an additional Sony, or another Sony, I had to just pipe up and say, please don't. And I don't usually have to say that. But first of all, Sony's getting out of the PC business. They're going to sell it to their supplier base. And by June, I just found out. And I used to, whenever I worked on a Sony Vaio, it was always a pleasure. They were really easy to work on, top of the line. And if they ever failed, it was a minor component, like a hard drive, because someone really dropped it in something and the case didn't break. They're really good. But I had to draw the line here. My daughter's Vaio worked very well. My son's, cheaper. When I took it up, he had his hinges bust loose on the LCD panel because they cheapened up the LCD panel so much that they actually pulled away from the LCD panel.
Right.
And he got the, you spend $900 on a laptop, you don't expect the hinges to pull away like that.
No, that's a lot of money to spend on something like that.
So, Tom, I basically gave you my opinion and said basically stay away from Sony. Shane Hamlin recommends ThinkPads highly because of
Lenovo.
The Lenovo ThinkPad series because they are... they have a great warranty, great customer relations, and they're just rugged. And when they come back, it's usually something very minor.
And Lenovo was also a big American brand, and that was sold. It was IBM, and that was sold to Lenovo.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, 6 years ago?
I think, about 5 or 6 years ago, they bought that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's continued to be a great brand.
The commentary has been that they didn't cheapen it. They really kept the quality so that a lot of people, and Tom, this is what struck me when I was looking at your newsletter, your email rather, was that Lenovo, and I've heard this said again and again, kept the business-like durability and flexibility and
serviceability,
exactly. Things that companies have counted on the ThinkPad to do for them for ages.
And we should get paid by them.
Yeah.
So Tom, you and I did exchange a few emails.
Right.
Why don't you tell us your thought process and what you're looking for and what you've discovered when you've been researching these laptops?
Sure. I got an email from Microsoft that they're going to orphan the XP system, and then in April, and this was quite a while ago, and I realized I had to do something.
Right.
It didn't make sense to put the new, even if it would run on my computer, the 8.1 on it. So I started looking for a new computer, and my wife and I travel, and we have our own business, and so I've got to have a computer that's reliable, rugged. If something goes wrong, I can get it fixed.
Right.
And the Sony did that. I mean, it was wonderful. Not a bit of trouble with it. But then my wife started reading some articles about the Sony Vaio, and that they're going to sell the company, and then the later iterations have been a real problem for people. And I thought, oh brother, I don't need this,
Yeah.
Because for me, I'm not really computer savvy, and if something goes wrong, I mean, I really don't know how to fix it. I've got to rely on somebody else. Obviously, reliability is a big issue.
Right.
So I went to a local store and I looked at the Sony again. And I looked at Vaio, and I looked at the Lenovo. I'm sorry, looked at the Lenovo, and I looked at the Asus. And talked to the guy in the store, and he said all three of them are good machines. He didn't say anything critical about the Sony, but he did say he liked the Asus and the Lenovo, and he said those were probably the two biggest sellers for them. And he kind of leaned towards the Asus. He said a lot of engineer type people buy that computer, and I don't know what that means, but
and I'm not sure why either. I mean, I have several people that I work with, and they go, I love my Asus. They just love them, and I really haven't pinned them down why that is.
Yeah, well, so what I did was I emailed Ed, and I realized you can't make critical comments a lot of times, but I just thought you're the one people that I listen to that I learn things from all the time. And I thought, well, I could give it a shot and see if you'd respond to my email. And fortunately, you did. And based on the back and forth on the email, I narrowed it down. I had the guy at the computer store print out, the different models. And he printed out a Lenovo and an Asus for me. And I think based on, like I said, our back and forth, I'm going to go with the Lenovo. I've got to get it pretty quickly, and I'm going to get an extra 8 gigabytes of RAM on it.
Tom, excuse me. What is the price that's running at? Just to give folks kind of an idea.
$899.99, okay. And the additional RAM was about $170.
Okay, so you're talking about $1,000.
But Tom got a really nice machine. Touch. It's an Ultrabook, right? Mm-hmm. It's an IdeaPad. So this is a nice machine, Tom.
Well, you know what? I really, really appreciate the fact that, you know, your input, because it helps someone like me kind of narrow down the thought. I mean, I could have got that Sony and it could have been a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, I'm glad we were able to do that, because that's part of, sometimes, folks, you'll hear us give us news items about the industry out there, like the one that Ed did at the beginning of the program talking about Sony, and it's not just simply to fill the air with information, but that really has a big impact then down the road, for instance. That's you right. can get hold of Sony Vios out there right now and probably pay about the same amount of money for them. The problem is that you have not, looking down the road, going to have the kind of service.
And they may come back, right? When they get sold.
Absolutely.
Because when we were all worried when IBM was selling out their PC division, it was like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? And Lenovo kept the IBM brand name for a while and then kept the quality. In fact, maybe even enhanced the quality.
I think so. And certainly they moved up. Best ones of the Windows 8, what they call them, 2-in-1s, are some of those Lenovo devices. Yeah, Eddie.
You know, you might want to check Lenovo's actual website on this, because right now you said you went to the store. Lenovo's offering a $200 savings than the price you just quoted.
Ooh.
Well, you know what, Ed? I did check it. And the Lenovo store, even with the price savings, is only $50 cheaper. Can I mention the store I was at?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
It's Best Buy.
Sure, okay, fine.
I go there a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And we have the Geek Squad service, because it's important for the business stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so they quoted me like $900. I mean, the Sony Vio was like $1,400.
Right. Ooh. Well, I want to give you
one. You pay for design sometimes.
Yes. One other things I want to give you and our listeners as well, and I'll put a plug in for Shane's shop, which is Comptex Service. Computex. It's on Sterling Heights. Find a small shop someplace and check them out as well, because they may have some deals for you. And then the whole business about getting service, if you've got a small shop you can count on that's near you, that is golden. Hey, Tom, you've helped us, I think, to narrow some things down for people who have been listening or looking for machines. Thank you so much, and I hope, let us know when you finally make your decision, okay?
I will do that. Thank you very much. Your show is very valuable to people like me, and I really appreciate, Tom, you being on the air.
Thank you so much, Tom. We appreciate it, too, and back with some more. There is a world of information available to you through InternetAdvisor.net. That's our homepage. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker and Ed Riddell in studio with me here. And I would like to acknowledge the help that we get from some great people who are, as we say, behind the glass. That's Annie Nichols, who is our producer. Thank you, Annie, for being the friendly voice on the other end of the phone. And, of course, Shannon. Lady Shannon. Of the dials. She is the lady who is helping us stay on the air, spinning the dials and getting our music on and getting us on the air as well. We have received some emails from you folks during the week, and what we'd like to do on these programs is to bring some of them back and, if we get a chance to, talk with some of the people who have sent us those emails. And the person that we hope to have on the air with us, we all of a sudden heard the sound of a disconnected line, so I'm going to have Annie check that out to make sure he's still there. And if he isn't, we're going to work our way back to him. But John, one of our listeners, had an email that he sent us, and he said, after opening a PDF from a physician in Afghanistan who I look at cases for, Mozilla Thunderbird, which, guys, is an email client, okay, started sending emails for some type of party site to a large number of addresses. I ran malware bytes, but about 7 hours later, Thunderbird reported that it tried to send out more. And Microsoft Security Essentials, I believe, says that it found a Trojan called Rotbrow. Boy, that's a nasty sounding name.
It is.
And so is this the culprit, and how can you help me get rid of it? And John, thank you very much for sending us that email. And let's see if we can roll up our sleeves and help you. I hope that it isn't still sending out those emails. Is it, John?
No. But, you know, I mean, it's I as dumb as I was, after running all the antivirus software, I never took the basic step of changing my internet password, okay?
There you go. And, you're talking to the mail, right?
To the mail.
Right.
And so and after I did that, it stopped the
right.
the emails.
Right, right. It had gone and harvested that
email. Well, you know, and that's a good tip. I don't think I would have thought of that right away either, and I do this every day. So that, I mean, that's a great tip. So who was your internet mail provider? Was it one of the standard ones?
Yeah, I'm a Comcast guy. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
And I was running Thunderbird as my email client.
Good.
Okay.
Now, so Rotbrow is really just a Trojan that installs a backdoor. And the bad guys can do a lot of things with that backdoor. And maybe what they did was they set something up to send out those emails.
Yeah.
It itself doesn't always just send out emails. But
In other words, it can do more than just the emails, right? That's what you're saying.
It could do some real dastardly stuff, try to steal some personal information from your computer, John. And it may have done that also, by the way.
Right.
Hopefully not.
So you might want to, if you haven't already done so, it sounds like you already ran Microsoft Security Essential Scan, right? And then you also ran an Malware Bytes.
Yes.
And have you tried anything else?
I downloaded Microsoft has another scanner up on its website. I downloaded that and ran that too.
And what was the result from that one?
Eventually, I got the first time or two I ran each of those, okay, it reinstalled itself somewhere.
Yeah, right. It's
but
in registry.
Now, then I went back, as I should have done from listening to you for a number of years, okay, and came up in safe mode with network support, okay, and then reran all those things, okay, and now none of them can see it anymore.
Okay. Well, that's good, and I think
you
found
it. Yep.
Now, guys, is it possible that one of the things that's happening here, people, is that if you don't run it in safe mode, am I right, guys, you don't really get at it, and it reinstalls itself because it's in the registry? Is that the issue?
It depends on
It
depends on whether or not the antivirus software knows, or the anti-malware software knows specifically about this, what executables to kill in memory with your permission, and if they will allow it to be killed in memory. So when you run in safe mode, it runs a minimalistic version of Windows, and only very specific programs start up. And that's why that also helps, is that it's a good chance that a lot of these programs haven't started up or will not start up in safe mode. Some antivirus programs, if you're in normal mode, they will kill some of these, but not too many of them. Yeah.
John, have you just done just a search of all your file folders and directories for Rotbrow or Win32/Rotbrow?
Yes.
Okay. And you didn't find it?
No.
Excellent.
Okay.
The other thing I would suggest, and Shane brought this to my attention, when something like this happens, the first thing I always do, for your information, is to do a system restore back to a previous date. It might be a week. It might be only a few days. And what that does is that it restores my computer to a point in which I possibly was not infected, and definitely the new Trojan, because like Gary said, this Trojan that you had is just a dropper. It's a backdoor, and then it downloads instructions from the mothership, and this one happened to be a mass emailer. If you did a system restore back a week, you may have still had the Trojan, but it wouldn't have been doing the email spamming.
Now, Ed, do you do that in safe mode? Can you do that in safe mode?
System restore, yes.
Okay. A friend of mine did that, and what happened was when he got to system restore, it had been turned off.
Yes, and a lot of these viruses and Trojans, the first thing they do is turn off system restore or delete all the system restore points.
Yeah, if you were a bad guy, you'd do that too.
Exactly. Right? So I want to let people know that if they do that, they may find that it's been turned off. They're going to say, where's my system restore? Yeah. Sorry.
That's almost a sure guarantee that something bad's going on.
Okay, so system restore, and it sounds like you used the utilities. That's great. Doing it in safe mode or scanning in safe mode is a good thing. Another utility you can use is CCleaner. And what that'll do is it actually will clean your temporary internet files, and which were a lot of these viruses are stored as temporary internet files. So if you haven't already done so, I mean, it sounds like you're using Thunderbird So that means, are you using Mozilla as your primary browser?
No.
Internet Explorer?
Internet Explorer and Google Chrome.
Okay. So you could use an application like CCleaner. It will clean all the temporary internet files for you. And then it also has a registry scanner because it's quite possible. And I never recommended registry scanners for the last 10 years.
Well, because they didn't always work, right?
And Shane gave such...
Or could work, unfortunately, well.
Yeah. Shane Hamlin, who we have on our show, gave such rave reviews, and he uses it on a daily basis for customers that he's disinfected computers with no problems. Yeah. Right. And with that type of endorsement, I cannot... not endorse CCleaner's registry cleaner.
Right. It's gotten so much better.
One of the things, John, that you mentioned and that I tell people, like this week I've got three emails that came to me, and I didn't open them at all, but I got them from friends. All they had was the link. All I had inside of it was a link. Yep. And what I did immediately to them, I sent them an email back to them saying, looks like you've been hacked.
Right.
Change your password right away.
There you
go. So that's, in other words, my address was in their address book. That's how I got hit.
Yeah, if you want a guarantee that I won't look at an email and it's just send me the link with nothing else.
I just did that to my wife.
Oops.
No, Gary, you made a very good point.
I won't open it.
Exactly. And so, folks, when you hear this, if you're going to send a link to somebody, be careful how you send it and put some text in there because otherwise they may think that you're sending them or that you've been hacked.
Send them something so that they know that it was you that generated that email.
Exactly.
If it's just going to be a very short, just a URL or just...
Now, Ed, do you think that John should run something else now that everything's settled down?
CCleaner.
CCleaner. Okay. Main thing.
Yeah. And John, I wasn't saying for you to do a system restore now. You've already removed it. It's quite possible if you did a system restore now, the virus might reinstall.
Early on in my frightened state, okay, I went back into system restore, but I only could get a couple days back, okay, before Windows just wouldn't come up. I just sort of kept on hitting dates and getting closer to the present until I found one that Windows would reopen.
Oh, really? Yeah, you know, that can happen in Windows where it'll fail to perform a system restore, and then you just have to keep on going back and selecting other dates.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what Gary was saying is that's one of the first things now that the hackers are going after. So as soon as you see something happening, do the system. That's what Eddie said, and I think it's really do a system restore right away. Immediately do that system restore it right away.
Right.
And what do you think of the notion of having done all of this of running CombiFix as well?
You know, I haven't used CombiFix in a year or so. You've used it more than me, Foster.
I have, and I found that when you use it, and folks, this is kind of in general, when you get infections like this, use a cocktail of these things. Use a couple of them, and you've done that, John, already. But I found that CombiFix, in particular, used with Malwarebytes, has been very, very effective. So that's just not necessarily now for you, John, but for other people who are listening to this right now, it's a double whammy. And by the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, in the toolkit, Ed, you've got links to both of those, to CombiFix and to a safe link to that, by the way, plus Malwarebytes. John, thank you so much for your email, and I hope that we've helped not only you, but you've actually helped us to help other people.
Yeah, Foster, hey, sorry, John.
You guys have a great show.
Thanks so much, John.
I listen every week.
Thank you so much.
John. You know, we talk about defense in depth, right, to try to keep the bad guys out. Right. Well, when the bad guys get in, you know, you want to use a layered approach to get out. So your CombiFix with Malwarebytes and maybe a couple other things in that cocktail. Very, very sound advice.
I want to talk about bad advice from people when we come back in just a moment. Thank you so much for having allowed us into your life with the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell. And this hour, we've been talking about some of the emails that we have gotten from you folks, and we love it when you send those to us. Sometimes they're pretty thorny issues. Sometimes we can help. Sometimes we can kind of point you in the right direction, but we have a whole bunch of people here who all put their minds to it. Guys, there was an email that came in from David, and here's what he said. I left my HP laptop, which was a Windows 8 laptop, with a computer repair company to perform a virus scan / removal following the purchase of a Groupon-like promotion. In other words, he got stung. He bit on something. There was a promotion, and it turned out to be a nasty virus as well. Okay. Mm-hmm. The techs at the computer...
And he didn't say it was Groupon, right? We want to make sure.
I beg your pardon. He said
Groupon-like.
Excuse me. Yes, it was not Groupon, but he said Groupon-like. /like, and he had quotation marks about it. Yes. Thank you, Gary. The techs at the computer repair company say they performed a hard drive diagnostic test, and the test indicated that my hard drive was nearing failure. I've attached the shop's email correspondence. Does this seem legitimate, or is this a bait-and-switch situation? And this is kind of interesting, and I was wondering how you guys would read something like this. First of all, I was a little concerned because this is a Windows 8 HP laptop, okay?
Which means it's fairly new.
It's got to be a year old.
Yes.
Couldn't be more than a year old.
Yeah, but he could have had an update. He could have had a Windows 7, paid for an update,
true,
went to the store, and it could be a 3 or 4 year old computer.
Right. We're kind of reading between the lines on this. So it was a Windows 8 HP laptop. My first concern was, wait a minute, if it's running Windows 8, it could only be a year or a little more old. Why in the world is a hard drive going? Now, as you said, Ed, it can't. Hardware goes. That's something. Okay. So how do we judge this? He said, this is what they got from the shop. He said, before we run any of our virus scans, we first run a free hardware diagnostic. This diagnostic checks the components of your laptop to make sure that they're functioning properly. Okay.
Well, you know, and
you
I
probably
can,
even have that within the operating system.
Well, you know what? I can understand this because I can't tell you how many squirrel holes I've gone down where I'm working on someone's computer and it's running slow as heck, and then I can see that there's 120 processes running in the background, so I take 30 minutes eliminating and uninstalling all these things from startup they may have a problem here and they get rid of these other programs, only to realize after a half an hour that, oh my gosh, they're having a hardware failure. I don't look in Windows and see that there's disk failures. So it makes perfect sense if I was a store owner to run a hardware diagnostic.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, so that part, that makes sense. And they said, for you, our scan discovered that your hard drive had failed a read test, which means that the hard drive will likely become inoperable soon, and we've attached a photo of the test results for you for your record on this email. The problem with this sort of test result is trying to determine when precisely the hard drive will fail. Well, obviously, if it's on its last legs, you're gambling, whatever. Right. It could be tomorrow. It could be a month from now, that's true. The implication here is that we could proceed with our standard virus scan that you have a coupon for, but it wouldn't prevent your hard drive from failing. Now, I'm beginning to get a little suspicious. Just me. Go ahead, Gary. You aren't suspicious yet.
Well, no. What they're saying is they can remove the virus. The hardware's still going to
fail. Yeah, if the hardware fails. Right. Exactly. Okay. Our hard drive replacements and operating system reinstalls cost $179.99. $180.
That's
plus tax.
That's actually not bad. You'll spend probably between $80 and $120, depending on the hard drive. You know, they're going to charge you, you know, they would pay $80. They're going to charge you $120,
sure,
50% markup. And then they're only charging you another $60 to $80 to do a clone of that hard drive to another. You know, that's really not bad.
Okay. But since you came in with a coupon for $30 toward a virus scan, we're willing to honor that coupon. It gives you $30 toward the quoted service. So that's like $150 instead of $180, roughly. Not bad. Okay. The good news is, since we caught it when we did, we can potentially save your data and restore it to the new hard drive. That's with the cloning that you were talking about. Additionally, if you authorize the quote I've attached here, we'll throw in the data backup for free. In other words, the cloning for free. Not bad.
This guy's giving away his time. Whoever's doing this, really.
All of these details have been itemized in the quote and is attached in the email. The bottom line is it will cost you $155, roughly, after the quote. Now, if you've looked at this, guys, and it's come back to you, how do you evaluate this?
I'm with that. It sounds like if you're going to get somebody else to do this,
yes,
that's not a bad price.
Okay.
Right.
You can buy the hardware itself cheaper. The first thing you do, obviously, is back it up. Make sure you have good backup.
That data backup is critical.
Now you can take your time figuring out what you're going to do. If you want to try it yourself, I think you can do that. Most people do. If you're going to just let this guy give you a hard drive and just return it and it's all ready to go, and I'd say that makes perfect sense. What do you think, Ed?
Well, the same thing, except I would want my old hard drive back. Just because, you're suspicious of this because you don't know if they really did anything. If you went to an unscrupulous person, which is the first thing I would think of, is like, prove to me, and they're going to give you a printout. But then, you know, if they're a business owner, they're not going to survive long if they get too many customer complaints of people saying that. So just ask for your old hard drive back and you should be good.
Would you go to another shop and get a second opinion on this?
It does. I mean, I wouldn't, just because of the cost.
$150, you wouldn't? Right. Okay, you wouldn't do that. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if we're talking about, you know, $15,000, of course.
No,
I would,
obviously,
right?
Absolutely. So, yeah. So,
well, you know, other option you could do is just get rid of the virus, like I said. If it fails, you know, I'm going to have to pay you to recover my data at that point anyways. And I know it'll be virus-free at least when you move it over. So, I mean, you could take an incremental approach.
Okay.
And then you can go and run your own hardware diagnostics and then mm-hmm. take it back and have them do it. Or you can just have, you know, it's a tough call.
Okay.
Back it up first.
So, guys, we would say, yeah, back it up. Yes, definitely back it up first. Get your medical. First of all, make sure you're constantly doing this.
Right.
On a regular basis, get your data back. But generally speaking, this doesn't sound like too bad a deal. However, as you said, Ed, you would want to get that hard drive back, that old one.
Yes.
That they have there. At very least, you could spend another $15, get a tray, put that hard drive in a tray, and use it as an external hard drive to back things up.
Right.
On.
Well, the other thing I would do, I mean, because I'm a very suspicious individual,
yeah.
is I'm going to look at that hard drive and see, is that the same hard drive that came out of my unit? So if I go to my original sheet that I purchased that under, and I said that it was a 500 gigabyte mm-hmm. hard drive that I purchased my hard drive or my laptop with, and they gave me a 250. What's going on here?
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so on the balance, what we think from having, you know, not knowing much about your computer. In other words, if that was a Windows 8 HP computer that was only like a year old because it had Windows 8 on it, then I would be more suspicious if it was a fairly new computer. Wouldn't you guys be as well a little more suspicious if they're trying to replace a hard drive on a year-old computer?
Well, it's still covered underneath the manufacturer's warranty, probably of you know, 1 year from okay. Unless they bought it used or refurbished.
Okay,
I wouldn't take my computer to someplace where I had to question whether, when they would tell me something like this, that I would have to question whether it was true or not.
You know, and that's a good point, Gary. I mean, a lot of places when they give, you get these small shops. Here's a $30 coupon off for your scans. You're going to bring your computer in there, and they're going to find something wrong with it.
That's exactly it. That was part of what tweaked me as well. Yeah. Folks, I'm going to tell you something. On our homepage, on internetadvisor.net, go down to the bottom, and you have a little thing with a kind of a goofy-looking geeky guy, and it says, our trusted companions, I believe it says.
Yeah. We don't endorse them,
no.
But our listeners call
exactly,
in.
Exactly. Right. People have shared with us, hey, these people do a good job, and it's this shop here out in Jackson, Michigan, or it's this place in Sterling Heights, or wherever it may be. So take a look at that, folks, as well. And if you have a good experience with a trusted computer service, let us know about it as well so we can share it with our listeners. Thank you so much, Gary and Ed, for being with us. Thank you, Annie, and thank you as well to our wonderful engineer who's back there, dialing up for us and running our show. Thanks so much. And for the folks of you, that's Shannon, by the way. For the rest of you out there, thank you for letting us into your lives. And check out the InternetAdvisor.net Facebook page as well. Ed's been posting a lot of great news items there, and we'll keep you up to date with all the important things about computers as well. My name is Foster Brown. Have a great week, and we will see you here, same time, same place, next week. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.